Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 27.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins, it's a
car. This week we'll be talking about the Jays' best performing farm club this season, the Dunedin Blue Jays, with play-by-play announcer Tyler Murray. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook. Written by Jay Blue, Charlie Caskey, and Jared McDonald, the handbook is available as an ebook now at smashwords.com for only $7.99 US. You'll get all of what you need to know to follow the Blue Jays minor league system and the players. We've got team profiles with ticket information, media information, as well as team histories and driving directions. We've also got player profiles of over 250 players in the Blue Jays system. It's jam-packed with Blue Jays minor league goodness. And now, coming right up, my conversation recorded over the weekend with Dunedin Blue Jays play-by-play announcer Tyler Murray. And we're joined today on the Blue Jays From Away podcast by the play-by-play announcer for the Dunedin Blue Jays, what the hottest team probably in minor league baseball right now, with a fantastic record. I believe you have 29 wins already this season. We're joined by Tyler Murray. Welcome to the podcast, Tyler.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Great to be here.
So let's talk about those 29-11 Dunedin Blue Jays. What have you seen so far that's been exciting to watch?
Well, I think, as you know, Mike, it all starts with the pitching, and it's without question the best starting rotation in the league, even without Matt Boyd, who came here and allowed one run in five amazing starts and then was quickly called up to Double-A. Kramer Champlin has been good out of the bullpen. Kendall Graveman has just been called up to replace Matt Boyd in the starting rotation, and you don't really lose anything there. When you bring up Kendall Graveman, I'm sure you've talked with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler about this. He was a couple of outs away from a no-hitter recently, so that's just the great fortune that we have in Dunedin with all the pitching depth in the Blue Jays organization to have him plug that hole so quickly. And lately, they've been doing just enough offensively to get by. They had a 3-2 win last night behind another great start from Daniel Norris. They won 4-2 a couple of days ago and 4-1 on Friday, or Thursday rather. So at first they were blowing everybody out of the water. The offense was clicking. And even though they've kind of slowed down a bit hitting wise, the pitching is just so good. It's kept them in every single ball game. And I think the most runs allowed in a single start by a Blue Jays starter this year is just 4 runs. And it's only happened twice. So it goes to show you just how good this rotation has been. Again, it's guys like Jesse Hernandez, Ben White, Taylor Cole, Daniel Norris, and now Kendall Graveman joining the rotation with, as I said, Kramer Champlin having a spot start here and there, really bringing everything together. And obviously that's a big reason for the success.
Well, I'm glad you brought up some of those names, but I want to get to Daniel Norris first. He's obviously the one who I think most Blue Jays fans are probably the most aware of, at least from the terms of prospect noise. Mm-hmm. What have you seen from him? Obviously, he's started off extremely well this season. So what have you seen from him that maybe shows some growth and improvement over what you saw at the end of last year?
Yeah, we saw just one start from him last year, you're right. And he combined with, I think it was Steve Delabar and Dustin McGowan on rehab outings for a combined one hitter. He pitched the first 5 innings, so we were blown away. But I think a lot of fans last season, for his first couple of months in Lansing, might have been a little bit concerned. He battled some injuries, and they had to rework his mechanics, I guess. And in the month of August, he was tremendous. And for me, it's not a surprise at all how well he's doing this season. 3-0 with a .90 ERA. That's just 4 runs allowed in 40 innings. And it was great to see him last night get 88 pitches, the highest I've counted for him, in a minor league start. 6 2/3 innings, that was a season high for him yesterday in that 3-2 win. And he's using his three top pitches extremely well as of late. We all know he can throw mid-90s with his fastball as a lefty. That curveball has been great for him throughout his career, but lately it's been the changeup that has definitely impressed us here in Dunedin. He's throwing it for strikes. He's obviously getting swings and misses. And with everybody who throws a fastball changeup combo, he's got the same release point, and the velocity drop-off is just so impressive that hitters have been off balance. And you see some guys occasionally, second time through the order, start off a hitter with a curveball to keep him off balance. He'll start guys off with changeups, and when he goes from changeup back to the fastball, a lot of hitters are very much off balance. So he's definitely developed in terms of the kinds of pitches he uses, when he uses them, and he's just been so good under pressure this year. With runners in scoring position, opponents are hitting 118 against him, and I think the Marauders last night, the Pirates Advanced Day affiliate, stranded about 8 runners on base in those 6 innings plus that Norris had. So he really has shown a lot of mental toughness this season, and as I said, the more and more pitches he gets, I think the more and more we'll see him thrive and get deeper into those ballgames.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the changeup especially, because that's one thing that really jumped out at me when I saw him pitch last year in August in Lansing. And I think the fans out there, they know that he's a hard thrower, especially from the left-hand side, and they also know that he's probably best known for his slider, which I guess he doesn't seem to be throwing as much this year. But it's great to know that he's really developing that changeup, and he's also really learning how to pitch, which, you know, you can't really say for every hard-throwing prospect that comes through.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. Maybe we can compare it to Aaron Sanchez along the same line of development. Early on last season, Sanchez would get by with just using that fastball pretty much every time, and then he would throw in a curveball or a changeup for fun, it seemed like, because he could get anybody out with his number one pitch. But eventually, he was able to learn, as you said, how to pitch a little bit better, and that's a big reason why he's had some moderate success in Double-A this season. But just for Norris, I mean, he turned 21 just last month on April 25th, so a long way to go for him, and a very high ceiling, obviously, for him. And just the way he's continued to improve every single start, it's very impressive. And for us, looking at his strikeout to walk total, which is always important for a youngster, 48 Ks against 11 walks in 40 innings, that's definitely what you're looking for, as the season high for him was 3 walks against the Tampa Yankees back on May 5th, but he also had a career-high 10 strikeouts during that outing as well. So he's done a really nice job this year.
Well, that's great to hear about Daniel Norris, but let's talk about some of these other pitchers on the staff. Some of them are new to you, and some of them came up last year right at the end of the year, and some, like Jesse Hernandez, are, you know, veterans of the Florida State League. Mm-hmm. So what can you tell us about some of these guys, and what do you attribute their, you know, their collective success this year?
Yeah, one of the reasons the Blue Jays have had success over the years, and they're going for their 5th straight playoff appearance, still have no Florida State League championships, but hopefully that'll change this year. It's their ability to trust veteran guys, and it's weird to call a 25-year-old a veteran, but in terms of relative age, that is what it feels like in the Florida State League. Jesse Hernandez, a Florida State League All-Star last season, a 3.03 ERA, and he helped the Blue Jays snap their second losing streak of the season. They lost 2 games in a row to Palm Beach, the Cardinals affiliate, on the road last week, and it felt like the sky was falling. I mean, the Blue Jays have lost 3 games in a row about a month ago and 2 games in a row recently, and that's their only losing streaks all year, thanks to a great outing recently from Hernandez. And he's the kind of guy who can throw strikes whenever he wants. He's got a cutter and a sinker, and that combination absolutely keeps hitters off balance. And another guy who's been doing quite well with a moving fastball is Ben White. He's got the sinker. He played 4 years of college ball at Temple. Jesse Hernandez did the same at Central Michigan University. And we always talk about guys like Matt Boyd, who were just recently drafted after a 4-year college career at Oregon State in the Pac-12. So obviously a little bit different maybe for Boyd being drafted versus being a senior sign for guys like White and Hernandez, but they played 4 years of college ball, and that really goes a long way, especially in terms of gaining that experience, gaining that stamina, and being able to go deep in games to help out this tremendous Blue Jay bullpen. So really, all 5 starters the Blue Jays have, it doesn't seem as if there's any letdown from guy to guy. Maybe in terms of, yeah, fastball velocity for Daniel Norris, and maybe some excitement about his high prospect ranking, but everyone on this rotation And we give credit, of course, to catchers Derek Chung and Mike Reeves. They go out there with the confidence to get a win for their ball club, and so far, so good for them.
Well, there's one guy that we haven't really talked about in that starting rotation who is leading at a couple of categories, including innings pitched and strikeouts, and that's Taylor Cole. And Taylor's obviously a very interesting case because he went on a, I believe it was a Mormon mission after finishing college or after, at some point, I believe it was
in college. Yeah, after high school, I spent 2 years in Canada spreading the word.
There you go. And then he came back to baseball and was drafted by the Blue Jays and was dominant in Vancouver 2 years ago and had a fairly solid season last year in Lansing. But when I saw him at, early in the year, he wasn't fully in command of his pitches, and his velocity, which had been reported in the low 90s when he was in high school, hadn't come back. So what are you seeing? Obviously, he's taken a big step forward pitching in a you know more advanced league and really getting back to the dominance that he showed in Vancouver. So what are you seeing out of Taylor Cole that is that step in the positive direction?
Yeah, Taylor Cole is a competitor. That's the one thing everyone notices about him. Obviously a great guy off the field as well, but when he gets out there, he doesn't care who you are, he's coming after you. With that 2.31 ERA this season and a league high 56 strikeouts and, as you said, 46 and two-thirds innings of work, he has been, I think I'll say, a pleasant surprise for the Blue Jays in the starting rotation. He's been one of the rock-solid guys, and you said it, he was tremendous with the Vancouver Canadiens. I think he won Northwest League Player of the Year for his efforts, but what he's told us in terms of the key for his development is mastering his slider as a secondary out pitch. He's got one of the better fastball changeup combinations in the Florida State League. It gets him a ton of strikeouts, but being able to use that slider as well has helped him take another step forward. And Cole's a guy who also, like Daniel Norris, has shown that mental fortitude to work even better with runners in scoring position, a 179 batting average for FSL hitters when they've got a chance to knock in a run from second or third. So Cole's another guy who's a big-time strike thrower, and he's not afraid to attack hitters with a 3-1 count or a 2-0 count, but they always have to be ready for his changeup, which is really a spectacular pitch. And maybe, I don't know for sure, but maybe last year he was relying too much on those fastball changeup combos. But as we said, this year, the slider has been huge for him, especially righties versus righties, and getting them chasing down and away. And it's really added another element to his ball game that's just been huge for the Blue Jays this year. Taylor Cole, unsung hero, I'd say, out of the starting rotation.
Well, that's excellent to see, and I want to get to another unsung hero of this pitching staff, and it's really incredible how this guy is flying under the radar so much. When you look at his statistics and what he's meant to the back end of the bullpen, Eric Sekula with a phenomenal, 12 saves already, but 3 walks, 25 strikeouts in 15 and two-thirds innings.
I don't know what else to say about him. He's just, he's unbelievable. The Blue Jays last year had a great closer in Blake McFarland, but it just goes to show you how great the bullpen is in terms of depth and talent, that this year McFarland is more of a seventh inning guy, or maybe even a couple inning guy to help the Blue Jays out, just because Eric Sekula is so good right from the onset. Omar Malave, the manager, and Daryl Knowles, the pitching coach, decided that Sekula was going to be the guy. I think we all know how well he did in Lansing last year. Even with a tough season for the Blue Jays Class A affiliate, he had 19 saves. Well, he's 7 away from that right now through a month and a half, as you said, 12 saves. I think he led all of baseball when he got to the 10-save mark a couple of days ago. But he's just got such a good repertoire. It's such a varied pitch arsenal for him, maybe similar to a Casey Jansen. He has so many different pitches. It's not a Mariano Rivera type scenario where you throw a cutter all the time and hitters just can't touch it. He's got a pretty unhittable cutter, though, to be sure. He also throws a four-seamer, a two-seamer, works in a changeup occasionally, but the pitch that he says got him drafted was the curveball that also has some slider movement to it. And it's interesting, he says that's his go-to pitch, but he only uses it maybe once or twice an outing. But every time he throws that breaking ball, he seems to get a swing and a miss or a called strike three, because he sets you up with a fastball that moves in all different directions, those three different types we talked about. The cutter seems to be his go-to. And then when he gets two strikes on you and a hitter's thinking, here comes another fastball, which way is it moving? He pulls out the curveball, and we've seen some ridiculous swings and misses so far, keeping hitters off balance. And just 2 runs allowed this year in 15 innings. And the only save he's blown, he's 12 for 13 in save opportunities. It was a bit of a fluky play, a walk-off triple and an error to score the runner on the same play. So a quasi inside the park home run. It was very bizarre. And I think we can just write that off as an outlier because Sekulow really has been dominant. And I think, as you said, one of the overlooked guys in terms of the Blue Jays' success this year. As good as Blake McFarland was last year for the Blue Jays, Sekulow definitely is the guy this year in the ninth inning, and I haven't felt more confident about a bullpen pitcher in a long time in terms of throwing Sekulow out there to close out the final three outs.
Well, we could talk about this pitching staff all day if we really wanted to, but yeah. I'd like to get to some of the hitters because I know some of the people at home want to hear about Dalton Pompey especially.
Oh, Pompey, there's very little that this guy can't do. Maybe you look at him as a center fielder, a good hitter, gap power, obviously great defense. He won the 2013 Gold Glove Award for all center fielders for minor leaguers. So of every single minor league baseball player who played center field last year, MILB decided that Pompey was the best, and we're seeing that is quite true. Very few balls he can't get to, but beginning of the season, maybe the one hole in his game was the power numbers. Well, he has brought the heavy lumber lately. He hit home runs in 2 straight games just last week. He's got 3 homers this season. And Dalton Pompey, a switch hitter, obviously adds a new element to his ball game, or a different element to his game. Started the season hitting very well against righties, so when he batted left-handed, his batting average is .360 this year. And he started slow when facing lefties, so he obviously bats from the right side against lefties. But 2 of his 3 home runs now have come batting from the right side, so he's showing power from that angle and solid average hitting as a left-handed hitter, so he really has shown some well-roundedness in his game. He also leads the league with 17 stolen bases. He's only been caught once, and I'll share a story from yesterday. He got the day off for our first game against the Pirates affiliate on the road, and when all their staff saw the lineup, they were very upset that Pompey wasn't playing. They said, "We've been hearing about this guy all season. We came to watch him play, and he's taking the day off." And I said, "Well, he's grinding out there, so he's got to get a day off every once in a while." So everyone around the league is on the Pompey bandwagon. And it's fun, of course, because he's from Mississauga, that he's doing so well down here with the Blue Jays. And he certainly has lived up to the hype so far.
Absolutely. And it's great for all our Canadian fans to see such a well-rounded game and a mature game from a player who comes from especially a cold weather environment like the Toronto area. I know in BC they're able to play with a longer season, which is I think why you see many more British Columbia baseball players like Brett Laurie and people like Michael Krause. You have 2 Torontonians on that ball club, or Toronto area players, including Marcus Connect, who's also from the Toronto area.
Yes, Connect is coming around nicely as of late. It was unfortunate for him. Last week, he finally got his bat back where I think it needs to be, working with hitting coach Tubby Clapp a lot more lately. And they made a minor tweak to his swing mechanics, I think, just to maybe shorten it up a little bit, not try too hard to swing for the fences every time. But on May 4th and 5th, he combined for a 3-for-8 series with a couple of runs scored, a double and a triple and a run batted in. And those were 2 of his better performances of the year. But unfortunately, he hit the DL right after that for 11 days. But he came back yesterday for his first game off the DL, and he played great. We know at this point that Matt Newman was just promoted to AA, so congratulations to him. Marcus Connect was able to fill in the spot, and he did great yesterday in the cleanup spot and playing right field. He got a hit, and he drew 3 walks. He had entered that game with just 8 walks in 25 games all season, but 3 walks in that one game alone, and that was a huge part of the Blue Jays' win last night, 3-2. Without Connect, they would not have been able to take home that narrow victory. So great to have Marcus in there. And I think the big thing that he brings to the lineup for all the Blue Jays' success this year, the one element they've missed is maybe that one can't-miss power guy. Dwight Smith Jr., their leadoff hitter, has 4 home runs. Emilio Guerrero, the shortstop, has 4 home runs. So not necessarily 2 guys who you want to rely on for power. Connect is that guy, though. And now with him back healthy in the cleanup spot in the starting lineup, which we should see most days, it's a good element for the Blue Jays to have. Casey Hobson has been tremendous in the 3 spot, knocking in runs. Only 2 homers this year, but the Blue Jays don't need him to go deep. at least the way this season is going, he still is tied for the league lead with 33 RBIs. So with Kinect in there, maybe you want to look to him to provide the power for a Blue Jays team that doesn't have a ton of it right now. So it's good to have Marcus back, and we know just how good he can be with the long ball.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Casey Hobson, because I just wrote about him the other day and sort of wondering where the power has gone. You know, he led the team in home runs last year. He hit 43 doubles in 2012 in Lansing. You know, he's a guy with a lot of charge in his bat. And, you know, I saw that from him down in Florida in spring training. He's only got two home runs. He's only got five doubles and the batting average is down as well, although he did have a couple of hits yesterday to, I think, bring it up to what it was, above what it was last year, despite a very low BABIP last year.
Right.
What I'm wondering about with Hobson is, you know, I looked into some of his batted ball data, and it seems like he's hitting a lot of ground balls and a lot of balls on the ground. What can you tell me about what he's doing from a first-hand perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. When we talk to Casey Hobson, we talk about his approach at the plate. We'd like to get everyone's opinion on that, what they want to do when they head up there. He says his whole career, and even now, he just stands up there trying to hit a hard ground ball, believe it or not. And oftentimes, last year, it resulted in home runs. But this year, it's resulting in a lot of singles. And it seems a little bit unorthodox, I understand, for a big first baseman who's looks like a slugger, 6'2", 205 pounds. And he obviously has shown power in recent years, but right now, what the Blue Jays need in that three spot is a run producer. Dwight Smith and Dalton Pompey get on base like crazy, and Hobson has led the league now with sacrifice flies and RBI hits, including, you know, ground outs and fielder's choices that bring home runs. So that's a big reason why he's tops in the league in RBIs right now. But in terms of power, I wonder if the batting average is low right now because he's worried a little bit too much about it. Sometimes it can get into your head. You're the three hitter. You only have two home runs, and through 37 games, he's certainly not on pace to reach that 19 homer mark that he had last year. But in yesterday's win, it was 2-2 tie game in the ninth, and he overswung on a hanging slider and ended up blooping it into center field for the game winning hit. So a little bit of luck there for Hobson. And you talked about that BABIP. Maybe that'll improve for him this year. Those balls in play, a little higher batting average for him, but you know, Hobson knows what he's doing up there, and he understands that he's in a little bit of a slump right now, but maybe those two hits yesterday can help him out. But I think the key for him isn't worrying too much about hitting the home runs, although unfortunately, I mean, like it or not, I guess, in the big leagues, if you're first baseman, you want to make it up, the organization wants to see those power numbers, so you can understand why he might be pressing a little bit to hit the long ball.
Absolutely, and the one thing that I do love to see from Casey Hobson is that he doesn't let it overtake his ability to get the job done. You know, you mentioned that he leads the league in RBIs with 33, and he also has seen big spikes this year in his walk percentage, and in his strikeout percentage has dropped considerably. So he's actually improving his game in those two areas, despite, I guess, the power outage.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, he's slugging .299. That's not a beautiful number for your three hitter who you're looking for gap power and home runs from. But 20 walks against 17 strikeouts, that doesn't sound like your power hitter either. That sounds like a great on-base guy and just a great hitter. He started the season on an absolute tear. He was hitting up in the 350s in the first couple of weeks of the year, and obviously it's slowed down a little bit for him. But again, he might be the best situational hitter this league has right now in terms of being able to get those runners in from third base with less than one out. And when he needs to, like last night with two outs, those hits have been coming as well. The batting average with runners on base is .278. In the first couple of months or first couple of weeks, it was about .450. So he's still hitting pretty well with runners aboard, and both of his home runs have come with men on base. So you can definitely put the clutch tag on Casey Hobson. I know a lot of baseball minds don't think that exists, but the reason the Blue Jays have done so well this year in large part is because when Casey Hobson gets hits, you know, 29 hits in 37 games doesn't sound like a lot, but pretty much every one of those 29 hits has made a huge impact on the Blue Jays' winning efforts this year.
Well, that's, you know, good to hear, and we hope that he pulls himself out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of, you know, we spoke about walks a little bit, and there's a fellow that I always like to keep an eye on his walk numbers because, well, he almost never walks, and that's Gustavo Pierret. And,
yeah.
And Gustavo, Walked, I think, only four times last year through the entire season, I think in over 400 at-bats between Lansing and Dunedin. And this year, already through 130 at-bats, he has five. So what can you tell us about Gustavo Pierre and his play at third base? It also looks like he's cutting down on some of the errors.
Yes, and it almost feels silly to celebrate a walk drawn by Gustavo Pierre, but we need to. You're right. Four walks all of last year, and he's a free swinger. He's an aggressive hitter. He hit for the cycle last year, as I'm sure a lot of Blue Jays fans know, and his hits came early in the count. For whatever reason, the Brevard County Manatees didn't get the scouting report that if you work him deep, he might chase one, but he really has worked hard in the offseason and into this year. I think this could be a breakout season for him. He's hitting around 250, but recently the at-bats he's had have been really impressive. He was 0 for 4 yesterday, but that snapped a 10-game hitting streak, and we're seeing him work the count, not just because pitchers are trying to get him to chase terrible pitches, but he's laying off the close ones. I think last year, he's a right-handed hitter, so righty versus righty for him. He had a lot of trouble chasing sliders down and away, like a lot of hitters do. But for Pierre, that was definitely a big hole in his swing. And maybe it's still there, but he's not swinging at those pitches anymore. He's using the art of the check swing a lot this year. And again, it sounds a little silly to reward someone for check swinging, but Gus has really come a long way in that regard, and it's helping him find better pitches to hit. Obviously, a lot of hitters like the fastball, and that's Stubby Claps mentality. Lay off those breaking balls and wait for your count, wait for your fastball, and then drive it. And that's what Pierre's been able to do this year. Now at third base, I'm glad you brought up his defense as well. He's definitely developed big time in that regard. He hasn't committed nearly as many errors at this point that he had during the second half of last year when he transferred from Lansing to Dunedin. And that throwing arm, it's always been good, but now it's accurate. The power he had on it was just tremendous last season. He throws across a diamond with ease, so it was just a matter of making sure it was on target, one, and then making sure that he fielded ground balls cleanly, which is obviously the most important part. And he's been fielding little dribblers down the third base line well. He's been handling hot shots toward the bag at third well. He really has come a long way at the plate and in the field, and I'm really glad you brought up Gustavo Pierre, because it has really been impressive to see how well he's done this year. And just a great guy and a hard worker, and we're all very happy for him, and we hope it keeps up.
Well, we do too. And his left side of the infield buddy there, at Emilio Guerrero, has been playing most of the games at shortstop, and I definitely wanted to touch on him, especially because, you know, he's sort of one of the guys that I've seen firsthand, and, you know, really like what I saw from his swing. Obviously, you know, there are some great things that he's doing, and there are some things that he still needs to work on. You know, what are you seeing from Emilio, and what do you think he's been able to do so far?
I look at Emilio Guerrero, I just see talent. Tons and tons of talent. Defensively, he's shown pretty good range, and sometimes he gets to balls that you might not normally see shortstops get to because of his long frame. He's 6'4", and they call him Flaco, which is Spanish for skinny. He's 189 pounds. You know, we've all been there, but he knows he's trying to bulk up a little bit, but he doesn't need to right now. His swing is so quick and heavy that he's got four home runs this year. As we said earlier, it's tied for the team lead. He's been getting a lot of big hits as well. Right now, he's actually on a five-game hitting streak, and he's been on base in each of his last nine games. So he's been huge for the Blue Jays in either the five or the sixth spot right behind Hobson and Connect. But defensively, the error numbers are a little overblown. The official scorers on the road sometimes have given errors to him, and maybe they should have been hits. And sometimes at home, we like to the official scorer here might give him an error, unfortunately. But it's one of those cases, and I think you hear it about a lot of talented defenders, that just because he got there, he put himself in a tough position. It went off his glove, and if he had been slower or had less range, it might have just went by him cleanly for a hit, but instead he cost himself an error. He had an amazing play last night, Mike, ground ball in the shortstop hole. We've all seen it, you know, the old Nomar Garcia Parra Derek Jeter style, throws off balance from in the hole, and the umpire called the runner safe, but, you know, it was a very close call, I guess I'll say. So Guerrero showing off the arm strength and the range out there at shortstop. And really, that's the only concern we have with him right now. Once he gets that figured out, he'll be a complete player, because at the plate, he's shown great gap power. He's got seven doubles this year, the four home runs we talked about. And with those long strides, he can swipe a bag or two. So Guerrero, with all his talent, has really been impressive. And once he starts to develop it even more, like we've seen Gustavo Pierre do, the sky is the limit for Emilio.
Well, we're all just waiting for instant replay and the challenge system to be implemented in the Florida State League, so that those plays will go, you know, the right way.
Oh yeah, well, our average game time is around 2.5 hours. That's not too bad at all. So I could stand to wait around for another minute or two just to see if we get those calls right. But to the Blue Jays' credit, they've all been very professional in any close calls, and it's easy to do with a 29-11 record. But you know, it's all about brushing it off and getting back up there. It's all part of it, as they say.
All right. So I just want to put one more question to you before we go, and it's sort of a more organizational wide one, or you know, deals with the team. And people have been asking about Dalton Pompey and when he's going to be promoted, especially mm-hmm. after this torrid pace. And one thing that I've been saying is that I think the Blue Jays are going to leave him in Dunedin, and especially him and Dwight Smith and other players like Daniel Norris, mm-hmm. who have been, you know, lights out, but they're still young. I think they're going to leave them there until at least the end of the first half. I think the Blue Jays like to have their teams in the playoffs. I know the Blue Jays want them to complete at least, or I think the Blue Jays want them to complete at least half a season at one level and mm-hmm. really get into a rhythm there. So the question to you is do you think that there's a, you know, what are the chances of these guys getting the promotion at the break? And two, does that make you a little sad, especially with the playoffs being held in the second half of the year, that you'll see sort of what happened last year where the Dunedin Blue Jays had a fantastic team on the field to take the championship in the first half, but when the playoffs actually came around, some of those guys weren't around?
That's a great question, Mike. I guess it's a little bittersweet, I guess. You know, you lose the camaraderie of the guys you see every day, and you love to watch them play. But in the end, that's what we're all rooting for, isn't it? We're rooting for them to make the next level and then eventually get to the big. So when they move up, it's definitely bittersweet. But I think in a perfect world, and that's not one we live in, the Blue Jays would have every single one of their top prospects play one full year in Lansing, then one full year in Dunedin, then one full year in Double A, and then see what they do from there. But I'll compare Pompey's performance in this first half, in his first Florida State League season, to Andy Burns from last year. He was rock solid all year long in the first half with the Blue Jays, and everyone was saying, man, when is this guy going to get sent up? Well, because it was his first year, the organization wanted to see, could he handle it through 60 to 70 games? Burns, he hit .327 as part of that first half championship, 8 home runs and 53 RBIs in 64 games to lead the team in every offensive category. Well, Pompey's right there as well, maybe even a little bit better. .338 batting average in his first Florida State League half, I guess we'll say. 3 homers, 20 RBIs, and 17 steals obviously speak for themselves. So Pompey is definitely on his way, and I think you're on the right track there, Mike. I could be wrong, but it does seem like the Blue Jays like to have their guys finish out a half. And I'd like to think it's because they enjoy getting those playoff berths, but maybe it's more just to give these players a little bit of a good chunk of time to get into that rhythm, prove they can continue the success, and then move up just to have enough confidence, I'd say, to be able to handle the Double-A level, which, as we all know, might be the biggest jump from the Advanced A level up to Double-A, where you've got top prospects playing every single day, and not just one per game, but plenty per game. And maybe that's a part, Mike, about why the Blue Jays have had 4 straight playoff appearances, but no championships, and it just works that way. Other teams like Daytona, who's won 2 championships in 3 years, the Cubs affiliate, they don't have great first halves, but then they get loaded up from the draft and from their Class A affiliate in the second half, and that leads to titles. Well, the Blue Jays are a little bit backwards, or not backwards, but just the opposite. And that's how they work, and that's fine by us. It's always fun to watch the first half success, and we hear Lansing has a lot of fun talent this year, and DJ Davis, Matt Dean, Mitch Nay, to name a few. So maybe this year could be the year where the players, the spots lost up to Double A this year could be replaced somewhat evenly by Lansing talent. But, you know, we don't worry about that yet. There's still a long way to go in the first half, and just a 3-game lead despite all their success so far.
Absolutely, and I was just looking over at the standings, and it looks like the magic number is 28. So there's still a long way from actually clinching a championship. But it basically means 14 wins, 14 losses by the Blue Jays and the Lakeland Flying Tigers, and that's a championship. But again, with a .725 winning percentage, over the first 40 games for the Dunedin Blue Jays. That's a terrific record, and it looks like the team, you know, they do have to keep the pedal down, and especially with the Lakeland Flying Tigers lurking there. And I believe they gave you some of the best competition so far this season.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the Detroit affiliate down here, they've been good the last couple of years. They actually won a championship 2 years ago. The Blue Jays do have the season series advantage just by a little bit. 3-2, I believe it is, they're on top. But I mean, Lakeland has definitely played the Blue Jays tough. They were the only team to get a win against Eric Sekula with two runs in the bottom of the ninth last month. The Blue Jays had to take an extra inning win against them, a couple of narrow wins, and there was one lopsided win. They won 12-4. So the Blue Jays, I think, might be a more complete team than Lakeland, but the Flying Tigers don't seem to be going anywhere. And it's never been easy for the Blue Jays, even with their incredible first half success. I'm sure you remember last year, Mike, they had to win four straight games to close out the first half, and they won by just half a game over the Brewers affiliate, the Brevard County Manatees, in a very exciting championship race in the first half. So maybe we're headed for the same thing this year, but that keeps the players engaged, and it's always a lot of fun for us to cover it.
Yes, and hopefully they won't have Jose Reyes to help out this year. Hopefully he'll be able to stay healthy for the rest of the year and stay in Toronto.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always fun to have the big league rehabbers down. Adam Lind seems like he's doing great ever since getting the tune-up down in Dunedin, ever since he got back up to Toronto, and it's good to see Casey Jansen back as well. So, yes, it's fun to have the big league rehabbers down here, but we know that does take away from the big league ball club. And that division in the AL East, that's wide open, Mike, so pretty excited about the chances this year. Although, you know, there are ups and downs left and right, but how about Dustin McGowan and Drew Hutchison last night? He took care of business, and that was a lot of fun to hear about. We had a game, but obviously Hutch did great, and looks like good news, good times up in the big leagues right now.
Well, it depends on who you talk to in the fan base, but there's definitely have been some excellent stories with the Major League team, and definitely still in the race, and you know, the great thing is that as many things that have gone wrong so far this year, especially with that starting pitching, there have been things that have gone right, and the Blue Jays are still in the race.
It should be a fun one to watch down the stretch, and obviously from Dunedin up to Toronto, the Blue Jays, they're right in the thick of things, so it'll be a good time.
Absolutely, and we'll keep an eye on what's going on down in Dunedin. Thanks a lot for joining us. It's Tyler Murray, the play-by-play voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, Mike. Thanks a lot, man. You do a great job with the blog, and everybody out there, keep tuning in and keep reading his stuff. It is awesome, and it's always fun to be a part of it, Mike, so thanks again.
And that wraps it up for episode number 27 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Tyler Murray of the Dunedin Blue Jays for joining me. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week, and go Jays, go!